The man is nuts. He is absolutely screwed up in the head.
Robbie Kaplan, E. Jean Carroll's lawyer, who we've had on this show, do you think she goes after him again? Or do you think she's like, oh my God, how many times can I sue this guy for defamation?
I think there's no question that both of these new repeat defamations can now be brought in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York, and as a related case will be assigned to Judge Louis A. Kaplan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and because I'm not a lawyer, I have asked my good friend George Conway from the Society for the Rule of Law to explain the legal news to me. Now, I have a lot of things I want to talk
news?
About. There is, but I have something more important I want to talk to you about first.
Okay. Is
Since
it personal?
You explain it all, okay. Can you explain Kate Middleton to me? Because you have corgis, so
I don't really have
like
a clear picture. I don't have a clear picture on what's going on.
You don't have a clear picture? No.
No.
Is it
out of focus. Did you see the version of them that he did with Bernie Sanders and mittens and the kids around him?
No.
That was a pretty good one.
Do you follow the royals?
Not sufficiently to. Not you know, I mean, like everyone else, it's sort of a side amusement. I don't follow. I didn't watch the Oprah interview of the sister-in-law.
Sure. Meghan Markle.
Meghan Markle, yeah.
Yeah.
I never watched Suits.
So I honestly never had no idea who Meghan Markle was. And then Suits is on Netflix now. So I watched like, I don't know, half the first season. And I was suddenly like, oh, I get it why people are all obsessed with her.
Why are they?
I don't know.
Yeah, but I can't pass judgment on her. I mean, you know, that doesn't seem like you'd want to marry into that royal family either. So, and they are dysfunctional, the family. So,
I pay zero attention
on everyone's houses, I guess.
I pay zero attention to any of it, but I do watch The Crown. And so I'm just going to wait. If you're not going to explain it all to me today, that's fine.
That's fine. The corgis, though, you know, I mean, they do their thing. And
I thought
happy.
That you would maybe know because I thought the corgis might be an
the
homage.
The corgis, yeah,
to...
they all spy on they spy on their owners and they come.
They're like part of a secret network.
They share information, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, when I'll wait for the new episode, the new season of The Crown to tell me what's happening, the story, since you won't. So, okay, before we move on to our next topic, I want to pay some bills by saying that this show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. George, last week we talked about what we would do if we had just one more hour of sleep, and then we go on and lose an hour of sleep with daylight savings time. I don't know if that is destroying you. It's destroying me.
Yeah, maybe you are older than you say you are.
I
mean, when I changed time zones, I went to the Super Bowl a few weeks ago, and I was basically non-functional for a week.
Yeah, it is terrible. Yeah. And with little
and
kids,
I got my,
man.
And with dogs, I have dogs. Okay, these dogs, you know, normally you can wait till 7:30 before they start barking for food and to go out. Now they're barking. They know what time it really is. You cannot fool these dogs. They are up between 6 and 6:30 and they want what they want now.
Yeah.
And say, we don't care. Oof, we don't care about your daylight savings time. Dumbass humans changing the clock. We don't need clocks. We know what time it is.
The point is that it can feel overwhelming trying to get everything done in the day, especially when they take hours from you, while also taking care of yourself mentally and physically. That's why it's so essential to know what's important to you. And therapy can be a great way to find out what aspects of your life you should be prioritizing. George, last week I asked you who in politics do you thought might need therapy? I don't know if there's anyone you want to add to the list, but I did see that Elon Musk tweeted something like, I've never been to therapy, like as a boast.
You know, for the other person we may be thinking of, I mean, I don't know that therapy can help him. I mean, with all due respect to our sponsor, but for most people, it's always good to talk about somebody who's talk about things with somebody who's not indirectly in your life and who's seen other people talk about things before and listen to you and just talking it out and thinking about it, and it helps you structure what you're doing.
If any of our listeners are considering starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/AskGeorge today to get 10% off your first month.
I can't
month.
Be a therapist myself. I get what you're
saying. Yeah, don't ask
me. Don't ask me.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/AskGeorge. Okay, let's get to the legal news. I want to touch quickly on Robert Herr, because we haven't really talked about this yet on the podcast.
If he had a Twitter account or something, would he put like his pronouns are his and her?
Her?
Oh. Hers.
You are into your puns. I get it now. Yeah. I didn't know where you were going with that.
He could go his and hers. He could use both.
He could.
Right?
He could. That had not occurred to me.
Yeah. But well, I'm very big on pronouns.
What did you? You're big on puns. Hey, this is one of your. It's one of the best parlor games you play on Twitter or X or whatever. Did you watch the State of the Union? Did you have an opinion on it?
Yes, I thought he was very good. I thought he was very effective. I didn't watch the whole thing, but it was sort of like the second debate in 1984. You didn't have to watch all the way to the end to realize that he recovered from the damage that had been done. Mm. Like the second debate, remember the first debate?
I was four years old, so no.
No. Okay, I'm leaving. That's it. That was mean. No, I mean, the first debate, he was just kind of not with it. He was tired. He was rambling. And everybody says, oh, my God, they discovered he's 77 years old. And he was 73 at the time. That's the old. He was the oldest president ever at that time in 1984, at 73, born in 1911.
Practically a teenager today.
And then, you know, people were kind of thinking, well, he's going to be 77 by the time he gets out. And then the first debate, he was kind of not with it. And everybody said, oh, my God, he's old. And then the second debate, Reagan totally busted that balloon about all the talk about it his being too old, because it was the only thing that could really derail his reelection, by making that crack, the famous crack to Mondale, I will not take advantage of my opponent's youth and inexperience, you know, in this debate. And that was just so funny. It just brought the house down. It was like, okay, bye-bye, over. Even though the funny thing was, I watched the end of the debate. Actually, I remember that as a kid. And he was summarizing something like, we live in a beautiful country. And he was talking about driving up the Pacific Coast Highway, Highway 1. And he started rambling and he never got off the highway and his time expired. And I remember thinking, oh no, is he going to be back in the suit? But it didn't matter. Nobody watched the end. Uh-huh. So that's what I did with the State of the Union. I kind of saw like, okay, he's fine. This is going to blow them out of the water. And it turns out that's exactly what happens is that they said, oh, he's yelling. He showed too much energy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they get you either way. But, it, you know, the old thing I think is not going to do very much from now on.
That I'm not certain of, but I do agree that he did a good job. But Herr was sort of in the ether, as Joe Biden gave.
Well, and then he got blown out of the water.
Yeah, right? Because he had said, what did he say? He was a kindly elderly man.
Well, this is all true. I mean, I have to say, my first reaction to scanning the Herr report was, you know, in context, okay, so we forgot some dates. We all forget dates. It's not, I don't think it's that bad. But the press really was playing it up. And I was thinking, I didn't assume that he was mischaracterizing the testimony. I just assumed that he was just throwing in an additional reason. Because one of the things that lawyers tend to do and judges is when we decide to go take a certain position or get to a certain result, we throw the kitchen sink in and we write way too much. And instead of just sticking to the two or three key reasons, we throw in a bunch of other things.
Why do you do that? Is it just because you're loquacious? You can't help it?
We can't help ourselves. Yeah, we're compulsive. And, you know, if you don't like this argument, we got another one. And we got another one. And we got one that if you don't like this argument, throw that one out and use this one. Right, it's alternative. We argue in the alternative. We do all sorts of things, and we can get out of hand. And so I thought maybe that's what happened with him, but it turned out to be far worse. I mean, when you actually look at the testimony, it wasn't that. It wasn't, he forgot the year that his son died, but he remembered the date. I mean, sometimes that happens to us all the time. I remember it was the day before Christmas, and What year? Oh, 2001, 2002, around that era, I guess, because the years all blend together, particularly when you get old like me, you know, old enough to remember the debates in 1984, yeah, unlike you.
That's right.
And then, you know, Joe Biden, yeah, he's really old. Yeah, he's really old. I mean, that's, yeah, you know, that's a fact.
Yeah. Well, so her, and I don't, so he's a Republican lawyer.
Yeah.
So Trump appointed him to as the U.S. attorney for Maryland. And then he went to private practice. And then Merrick Garland appointed him to be a special counsel.
True.
And so why did Merrick Garland choose this guy, do you think?
Well, I think he chose, I think he wanted to choose somebody who would be immune from the criticism that he was some kind of Democrat, that the special counsel was some kind of Democrat in the pocket of the democratically controlled Justice Department. It makes a lot of sense. It adds credibility to the investigation to have somebody who clearly does not have political motives to bolster the person being investigated. But then you have the flip side is that maybe they'll bend over backwards against him. But here, there was no charge. He basically said the evidence was insufficient to charge for any number of reasons. And I just was amazed that these words about Biden's age and memory really got that much attention, because I watched the guy hold impromptu, you know, pressers, not pressers, full pressers, but he speaks extemporaneously at times, and he's 10 times more coherent than the former guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the former guy can't even read correctly from a teleprompter. I mean, remember the time he gave that speech where they basically hijacked the Lincoln Memorial for a campaign speech on July 4th, and he started, you know, the whole thing was on, he was reading from a teleprompter, and he starts talking about ramming the man parts.
Our army manned the airport. It ran the ramparts. It took over the airports. It did everything it had to do.
Okay, right? Instead of manning the ramparts, ramming the man parts, which, you know. And then he talked about, the airports, the Revolutionary War airports. Like, yeah. What the?
They were a disaster.
Okay, and he does that all the time. And then he's just basically ignorant about everything. So and then if you ever read a transcript of anything he says, you know, a transcript of his rambling monologues at these rallies, there's almost never a completed sentence. It's crazy. So
why do you think he gets, you know, there's this piece by, I want to say, Ed Luce in the Financial Times today. And
it's, love Ed.
It's about how his, like, the line "democracy dies in darkness" is actually democracy's going to die in boredom, because we just, like, Americans can't be bothered to look at Trump and see the craziness that we see when we watch him. Like, why do you think Joe Biden being old? Because let me tell you what, with voters, they would talk about Joe Biden being old.
No, because
they
don't
read Trump as old.
He's the president, and look, there are a couple of reasons I think that are sort of cosmetic, if you will. Biden has white hair.
Yeah.
He doesn't yell a lot, unlike the other guy. He yelled a little more at the State of the Union address, but that was perfectly acceptable because you're speaking in a large room with 500 people. You do have to project your voice more than you are here when I'm, you know, I could do my NPR voice. So and he showed the energy to be able to do that. I think a couple of other reasons is the white hair. He doesn't dye his hair the way Trump does. No orange makeup, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm kidding about the orange makeup. But also, I think Biden's walk is a little bit more tentative. And that's because he has back issues.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know, you see people, you know, that's just his gait isn't as, he doesn't take these long strides. But I think it's mostly the loudness. Trump is loud. He may absolutely be babbling incoherently, but he's kind of yelling and he looks energetic. And I think he gets away with that. So I think the other issue that's going on here there is Trump has not been exposed to the general public over the last 3.5 years.
I agree.
And that's a big factor. And it's the Democrats and the groups you're running and all of the other groups who are trying to preserve democracy have to remind people of who Trump is and remind them of what he is doing on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting, but it has to be done. And people will remember if they will remember the things they didn't like about Trump. And if the election becomes about Trump like it did in 2020, with less effort by the Democrats and everybody else, I don't think anybody hit Trump hard enough in 2020, to tell you the truth. I think the boats are going to move in the right direction. And we already see that the people, you know, the lots of Republicans voting for Haley and saying they will not vote for Donald Trump. And that's a big problem for them. The question is whether the Republicans can get back the votes somehow.
Yeah. So I want to play, just to wrap up the Her thing. This was a hearing that I'm not sure who wanted this hearing, whether it was Republicans or Democrats. But I think there was the idea that if you do have this hearing with her, you can sort of reignite the Biden is old thing to try to tamp down the fact that he, you know, helped himself out in the state.
And
of
that
the
he
union.
Had and he had these classified documents, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, that's right. But
which is a significant thing. I mean, he had those documents. He shouldn't have had those documents.
He shouldn't have had them.
Pence had documents. They shouldn't have had the documents. But the difference, of course, is they owned up to it.
Yeah, when they asked for the documents back, people had said, okay.
Right.
They let them sort of, you know, Trump like
right. Trump basically
said no.
He lied. He had his lawyers lie. He moved the documents around, produced some documents and said he had produced them all, tried to destroy security camera footage of people moving the documents. I thought they suggested that they, with a suggestion that they throw the server into the pool or something or pour pool water on it. I mean, it's just nutty stuff. Nutty stuff. I mean, and if he had just given the documents back when NARA came to him and said, hey, we think you have some documents, and he just said, hey, come to Mar-a-Lago and pick them all up. Yeah, there are some documents here. And gave them full access, thing would have been over. We probably would never have even heard about it, about the whole that he had classified documents.
Don't you ever feel like we're awash in special counsels? Like, there was only one special counsel I'd ever known of, and that was Ken Starr and the Monica Lewinsky situation and Clinton.
We have fewer now that there is this internal Justice Department regulation because it really gives the Attorney General the opportunity to keep these things in-house.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, given the fact that they were indicting a former president, I think he realized that he wouldn't be able to, the Attorney General realized he wouldn't be able to function politically if the questions kept coming to him about what are you doing here, what happened there. And so by sloughing it off into an independent counsel, it serves, or a special counsel, I keep using the old term, a special counsel, it's basically saying, not my issue now. I trust the special counsel, and we need to wait and let the special counsel do his work. And so it enables the Justice Department to function in a way that it would be more difficult to otherwise. And an example of that, you know, where the Justice Department got all bollocksed up because it was conducting an investigation itself of a Democrat was the Hillary emails investigation. Mm-hmm. Precisely because that was in-house, you know, it paralyzed them.
Yeah.
And that's why Comey did what he did when he probably, you know, when it really wasn't his business as the FBI director to make, you know, a public statement about it. You could write a whole book on this. So.
And I'm sure somebody will. Okay. So right now we're recording this on Thursday morning and Trump is currently in Judge Cannon's courtroom in Florida for a hearing about the classified documents case. So what is that case about?
That is the case that the Justice Department brought in 2023. Based upon his course of conduct in essentially hiding and squirreling away and keeping and maintaining documents that he was asked to give back that contained sensitive national security.
What's it about today?
Today, the hearing is about two motions. He's made a slew of motions to dismiss. One motion is a motion to dismiss on the grounds that the Presidential Records Act allows him to keep these records, which is just, I mean, I think it's been debunked about 100 times in 100 different ways, 1,000 times. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I can read to you the provision of the of the provisions of the Presidential Records Act that matter. And it says, the United States shall reserve and retain complete ownership, possession, and control of presidential records, and such records will be administered in accordance with the provisions of this chapter, i.e., given to the archivist of the United States and the National Archives and Records Administration that the archivist runs, and the presidents, former presidents, can go and seek permission to look at their documents, classified or unclassified. But he has the if you were doing it as part of your job, if you received a document, a memorandum as part of your job, or you issued an order, or you wrote a note. He used to flush them down the toilets, by the way, Trump. You know, those are the property of the United States, which makes sense. I mean, you employ people here at your company, and you know when they do work, it's yours. It belongs to the company, right? And that's the way it is for anybody who works for an organization, and it's true of the President of the United States. But his contention is twofold. I mean, first, he has the ridiculous contention that he can just basically declassify documents with it, you know, just by thinking about declassifying them and declassifying them in his mind by taking them up to the private residence of the White House or taking them to Mar-a-Lago, which is nonsense. There's a whole procedure there, but it's also irrelevant to who owns the records. He can even if he could declassify documents using, you know, I'm so old. I remember Carnac the Magnificent. I always use that. Carnac the Magnificent was this character that Johnny Carson played on The Tonight Show, where he would hold an envelope to his head and guess what was in it, and there'd always be a joke or something. But even if he were able to do that, which he is not, because there are specific procedures in place for classifying and declassifying documents, it wouldn't change the fact that all of these materials are owned by the United States of America. So the Presidential Records Act does not help him at all. It only confirms the point that the records did not belong to him. And of course, the other thing about declassification is that it's completely irrelevant to the charges at issue here. And that goes to the second motion that he's making, which is that the Espionage Act provisions under which he is a charge, each count of which could subject him to 10 years incarceration as a guest of the United States Bureau of Prisons, which I think is the only public housing he deserves to live in. He's arguing that those provisions, those sections are vague as applied to him, and they are not. They are absolutely not. It's very, very simple. If you have the Espionage Act, Section 793, prohibits a lot of things, but one of the things it prohibits is if you are in possession of national defense information of the United States that you acquired, as part of your job, and then you are asked to give it back and you do not, you are guilty of a felony subject to imprisonment for 10 years. And that's what happened here. And that's even apart from obstructing the investigation into his violations of the Espionage Act. So, you know, there is no chance that either of these motions that are teed up today will succeed. Or should be no chance.
Even in Judge Cannon's courtroom?
Well, yeah, there is a qualification of that. This case should be tried already. I mean, I know there's some complexity because it involves classified documents and there are all these procedures that have to occur when you have a trial with classified documents. But the fact of the matter is the exact contents of the documents aren't really at issue here. The fact that they are sensitive national security document information, which is what the Espionage Act applies to, is something that's really going to be undisputed. I mean, this is the President of the United States getting something from the National Security Council or the CIA or the Pentagon. I mean, this stuff is hot stuff. And it was marked as hot stuff. And then the obstruction charges, nothing matters other than the fact that he lied and tried to deceive the FBI and hid stuff. So there is no credible basis to dismiss these charges by any stretch of the imagination.
All right, so let's talk about what happened in Georgia. There was more going on.
Fell came down to Georgia.
George, what's happening in Georgia?
We have Georgia on our mind. Well, yesterday, the judge who apparently will rule today, I mean, he set that deadline for himself, hasn't ruled yet, on the motion to disqualify Fani Willis, which I think will be denied. Yesterday, he issued a decision dismissing a few counts, a very small number of counts in the indictment.
And six, right? The quash six?
Yeah, and I think only three or four of them were against Trump. It's really not that big a deal. The big enchilada in the case is the, you know, count one, the RICO charge, which is carries substantial penalties. These charges were charges that the defendants or some combination of them tried to persuade Georgia public officials to violate their oaths of office by violating the Constitution and laws of the United States and the state of Georgia. And while that is unquestionably a crime, and it was pleaded, the elements are pleaded as they in federal court, I think they would be sufficient. Georgia requires a little bit more specificity, as I understand it, in an indictment. And so the judge concluded that this is all well and good. Yes, you specify there's an oath and we know what the oath is, but you have to specify a little more about what constitutional and statutory provisions they were being urged to violate, and you have to list that out. Now, the judge noted in a footnote that there ought to be a procedure that they don't have in Georgia law, like in the federal courts, where what the defendants would make is a motion for a more definite, a bill of particulars or a more definite statement. And the prosecutor would just, you know, if it's granted, the prosecutor would simply write a document saying, here's what we mean by this. And the case, you know, no charges would be dismissed. And if the bill of particulars was sufficient, I mean, the charges would stand. In Georgia, they don't have such a procedure. And because this, what they call special demur, which is an old-fashioned way of saying a motion to dismiss, was granted for lack of specificity in these particular charges, they actually have to take these charges back to a grand jury and get a true bill on the revised, edited charges, and then bring that, which takes time, and then they'll make another motion to dismiss. Alternatively, they could take it straight up to an appellate court, but as the judge notes, that's probably not a thing that would work in on an interlocutory basis because these are novel questions of law. And so what Fani Willis has to look at is whether or not it's worth trying to resurrect these counts and delaying the case, or whether she should proceed on the remaining counts, which are all pretty substantial. And I mean, there's a good argument to be made that, you know, these dismissals aren't going to matter. And if you try to put these counts back, you're just going to waste time, and you're just letting a corgi-sized tail wag a dog.
Yeah,
corgis have no tails.
So that's what she'll do, right? Like, she'll just press ahead and not.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people think. We don't know. Some people think that, oh, well, you know, she'll want to get these back because one of the charges does relate directly to Trump's attempt to persuade, to put it nicely, to coerce, to put it more accurately, Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, to basically find him 11,000 votes. But there are all sorts of other things in the indictment, and all of these events that were in these particular charges are all wrapped into the racketeering claim as part of the racketeering count as part of this entirely massive, entire effort to essentially commit fraud on the public.
Speaking of fraud, actually, it's not really about fraud. It's about defamation.
Defamation.
They're not the same thing, right?
Well, you know, it's about a lying, which, you know, some people are really, really both good at and not good at. Good at just continually lying, but bad at telling convincing lies.
Yeah.
I don't know who we're talking about here. He might need therapy, but it wouldn't do him any good.
I was just looking for a transition. I'm not sure I grabbed one. But I did want to talk about E. Jean Carroll and defamation just quickly, because this dude can't help himself. So
oh my
he
God.
Did... In fact, pony up.
Can I just bang my head on the table?
he did pony up the $91 million bond to cover the verdict in the defamation case while it's on appeal. So
yes,
he found someone to do it. And because he can't seem to help himself, right, at a rally over the weekend, he started talking about E. Jean Carroll again. Let's listen.
Based on false accusations made about me by a woman that I knew nothing about, didn't know, never heard of, I know nothing about her.
If I didn't win on appeal, the most ridiculous decisions, including the Miss Bergdorf Goodman, a person I never met, I have no idea who she is.
What you heard there was just lie after lie after lie. And the important point is, it's the same lies that caused him to be liable for defamation in both the first case, which also had a claim of the relating to the physical assault, and the second one. So he's just asking for trouble. And what's interesting is the first clip that we saw was from a speech that he gave in Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. And because it was made in Georgia, I think a reasonable argument could have been made that any claim relating to that defamation would have had to have been brought in the United States District Court for the Northern District of Georgia. I mean, the logical place to sue would have been in the Northern District of Georgia, I think. I mean, I haven't done the research and really now analyzed it in depth. That's what people get paid hundreds of dollars an hour to do. But that's my gut reaction to that. Then he totally screwed it up. By doing that, by going on TV with this in the second clip, that was a phone call, phone interview with CNBC, the show Squawk Box, which has a studio. The anchors are based in Manhattan at the NASDAQ. Mm. And so as a result, I think there's no question that both of these new repeat defamations, which essentially say this very same things that he was held liable for again and again, can now be brought in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. And as a related case, will be assigned to Judge Louis A. Kaplan, who conducted both earlier trials. Now, that doesn't mean, I mean, if E. Jean had to sue in Georgia for that first defamation that we saw, you know, she'd still win because there's this doctrine called issue preclusion or collateral estoppel that just as Trump was precluded in the second case from contesting the jury's finding in the first trial that the rape did happen, that would be binding upon any jury in a case in the Northern District of Georgia. And the fact that he libeled her, that these statements, which are the same as the ones he was held liable for in the other case, that those were defamatory and met the standards of the First Amendment and of the common law. So, but, you know, it's just an example of this man's sociopathy and psychopathy. There was no reason for him to go back and continually to tell these lies. Okay, his people are going to believe that he's been screwed. All he had to say is, I'm getting screwed in the legal system, mm-hmm. right? And that would not have been specific enough for a defamation claim by Jean Carroll. And his rally goers would clap like trained seals because that's what they're going to do no matter what, because they don't actually, you know, they would never actually read newspaper coverage or document or anything about what actually happened in these cases, and they don't know things like the fact that the first jury that made all the findings about what happened at Bergdorf Goodman, you know, included some suburban or exurban people from Orange and Rockland counties, and being the political consultant type, you know the demographics. There's plenty of people driving around in Trump emblazoned pickup trucks out there, including there was one guy in that jury who was a devoted listener to the Tim Pool podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, all these things, you can't make those arguments. But the bottom line is he's so nuts that he's just digging himself deeper and it serves no purpose. It's irrational. It's absolutely, these are not rational lies. And the fact of the matter is they're not rational. They weren't rational lies 5 years, in 2019, because, you know, he's saying he never met her. There's a photograph of them meeting. I mean, there is a literal photograph where at a post after party. He knew who this woman was. She was on TV all the time, local TV, and this guy can't go 5 minutes without watching TV. Completely ridiculous. And then she told two of her friends right after what happened. It's just so insane. The man is nuts. He is absolutely screwed up in the head. And that's one of the things I think that needs to be hit on in this campaign is mm-hmm. that he is just, you know, the notion that we ever had trusted him to handle the nuclear secrets and the nuclear codes, nuclear secrets now that he's, you know, left in the ballroom. I mean, the notion we trusted him to do anything is just that we were lucky to survive those 4 years.
To be fair, we didn't trust him.
We, the American people writ large.
Yeah, right.
And I did vote for him in 2016.
That's true. We forgive you for that now.
I shouldn't be forgiven for that.
Do you think that Robbie Kaplan, E. Jean Carroll's lawyer, who we've had on this show, do you think she goes after him again? Or do you think she's like, oh, my God, how many times can I sue this guy for defamation?
I don't know what she's going to do. I don't think there's any reason why she shouldn't do it. The other thing that may be possible is that she might be able to get Judge Kaplan, if she brings this third case, to issue an injunction against Trump further stating this. And if he violates that injunction, he can be held in contempt. And it would sort of make the money flow faster. And in theory, he could be incarcerated. For violating a court order.
In theory. Okay. Last topic, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but I'm just curious. Do you follow the Hunter Biden stuff?
Well, he's been indicted. He was indicted in Delaware, but
the gun charges,
and he pled in Delaware. The plea didn't stick, and as a result, he's been indicted in the United States District Court for the Central District of California on gun charges and I think tax charges. I mean, the bottom line is in terms of the importance of this to the Republic is there has never been any evidence tying Joe Biden to anything allegedly nefarious that his son did. I mean, he loves his son. He's entitled to love his son. His son has had problems. Obviously he had a drug problem you know, he's a little bit of a black sheep Joe Biden loves his kid. And but there's nothing, they have never, ever been able to say that Joe Biden did anything. I mean, I think it was Comer or somebody was asked the other day, what's the biggest piece of evidence, the most important piece of evidence you have against Joe and Hunter? And he says, they once met. Joe Biden came over to a dinner that Hunter Biden was having with some foreign people at Cafe Milano.
Oh, I did see your back and forth on
Cafe Milano. Oh, yes, that's the place where I'm going to commit a crime. I'm going to do it at Cafe Milano because that no one will see you there. It's like the Elaine's of Washington, D.C. If you want to be literally there, if you go on to Cafe Milano's website, they say they have this quote and this beautiful picture of lovely, very attractive people having a good time at their restaurant. And it says the place to be seen. Washington Post says that. That was like a restaurant review or something. It's like, it's just nonsense. And they got no evidence that Biden did anything wrong, but they're just trying to create smoke, which is what they try to do.
Well, there's new reporting out today, actually, that the Russian who was out there, who was sort of testified that in Burisma.
Oh, yeah, the one who got indicted?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That there's like some tenuous connection to Trump's associates.
I did not follow that. Yeah. I mean, it's literally like that's a rabbit hole into a rabbit hole. But yeah, that's a good point. I forgot to mention that there was this guy who, they had these FBI 302s, those are the memos that FBI agents write when they interview somebody. And the guy, this Russian guy, had made some wild accusations that didn't pan out. And now he's been indicted for lying.
For lying.
About the Bidens.
Yeah.
And it turned out that this was the stuff that
This was their smoking gun.
This was the smoking gun, and it turns out that it's been proven to be a lie, and this guy's going to go to jail.
Yeah. The Trump or the Biden impeachment has very little left to move forward with. And in fact, we had Ken Buck stepping down from Congress, quitting angrily. And part of it is he's like, I'm not going to keep going forward with these like silly impeachments. Nothing here. Okay. A little all over the place today, but that's because there's so many things going on. I don't know how, you know, it's like a
juggling thing. You know, I can't even keep up with it.
Yeah, so how are the American people supposed to keep up with it?
Well, it's going to be interesting when there are actual trials.
Yeah.
And we're going to have one at the end of the month.
The New York one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, it'll be fine.
All right. George, as always,
yes, ma'am.
Thanks for explaining the legal news to me, and thanks to everyone for listening. Don't forget to hit subscribe, leave us a review on your podcast app, email us at askgeorge@thebulwark.com, and we will see you next week.